Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca. Norm Borg with you. A recent court decision is going to ease the tax burden for a lot of standardbred owners, and we'll talk to a lawyer who's well-versed on the subject on this edition of Trot Radio. Catherine Wilson is with us on the other end of my line, the founding partner of Wilson Lewis. One of her areas of expertise is equine law. She is an expert in matters of taxation as well, and we're delighted that she's here to comment on this recent court case that appears to give part-time horse owners some more tax advantages than they may have had previously. Is that right, Catherine?
That's right. So I'll give you a little bit of the background on the problem.
Certainly.
Section 31 of the Income Tax Act is the section that applies to farms. The horse racing industry is included in the definition of farms. And what it does is restrict the deduction of business losses from horse racing or farming businesses to a total of $8,750.
That's pretty restrictive, isn't it?
It is. Every other business in Canada is entitled to full deduction of their losses, but the horse racing industry only gets $8,750 if you qualify under Section 31. So it's difficult for our industry to compete for investment with other Canadian industries or the U.S. racing industry.
Certainly. Now, Mr. John Craig, who was the appellant in this case, had initially tried to write off more of those expenses, was turned down by CCRA, appealed, and successfully won on appeal. Can you tell us about that?
All right. Mr. Craig is a lawyer from Toronto. A very successful lawyer in Toronto, and in addition, he had a standard bred business, and he'd been in the industry for about 25 years. Now, traditionally, because he derived the majority of his income from his legal business and from investments, and not from the horse racing business, he would be caught by Section 31, and his losses limited to $8,750 a year. And it doesn't matter how much money he invests into that business. He could invest $5,000 a year. He could invest $500,000 a year. His losses are restricted to $8,750.
Anybody in this industry knows that if that's how much you can lose in a single year, there'd be a whole lot more of us in the game.
Well, what's happened is there was a big case called McDowan in 1977 that looked at Section 31, and it basically divided farmers and horse race business people into three categories: full-time farmers, part-time farmers, and hobby farmers. Hobby farmers are people that are in the business, not in the business, that are conducting their horse racing activities with no intention to profit. It's for fun. Mm. And those people aren't entitled to any loss deductions because they're not running a business. They're in it for fun.
Right.
The part-time farmer under the McDowan case was considered a sideline business. You had your primary income as a dentist, a lawyer, a business person. That's what made you the bucks. And then you had this secondary business as a horse racing venture. And in Muldowan, they said that is the group that's limited in their loss deductions. Through the years, that's been interpreted in a number of ways because the section is extremely confusing. And some of the cases come out and say, if farming is not your primary source of income, meaning if your horse racing business doesn't give you your most income in a year, then it's caught by Section 31.
Right.
Which wasn't the intention of the section, and I don't think was the intention of Muldowan, and it's made it very difficult for the industry.
Yeah, well, I would think a prime example of that, he's since retired from his practice, but you take, for example, a Cal Stiller, a Dr. Stiller whose primary income obviously would have been his medical practice, but certainly has a sizable investment in the industry. Might have been caught by that, would he not?
Yes, most likely. Now, what the Craig decision has said, and prior to Craig, there was a decision called Gunn, G-U-N-N. The difference between Craig and Gunn is Gunn was a cattle farmer, and Craig is in the horse racing industry, standardbred industry. Mm-hmm. So what they have said is the way Muldowan has been interpreted is fundamentally wrong because it means that too many people are caught with these restrictive losses. And they've interpreted it a different way to say that where your farming work, where your horse raising business makes a meaningful contribution to your whole sort of source of income to all your business, then that's enough to satisfy Muldown. The test looks at four different things. It looks at the time spent by the taxpayer mm-hmm. on the horse racing business versus the time spent by the taxpayer on their other business.
Right.
It looks at the capital committed to each venture. Normally in the horse racing business, a significant amount of capital is committed. Maybe not, but normally there's a sizable amount. It looks at potential profitability of the horse racing venture, and it looks at the taxpayer's ordinary mode and habits of work. Okay, those are the criteria it looks at.
Mm-hmm.
Before Craig, for the most part, they said if your horse racing business doesn't give you, you know, a ton of income, maybe even the majority of income, you're caught by Section 31.
Mm-hmm.
What Craig and Gunn now say is, we're going to look at all of these factors, time spent, capital committed, ordinary mode and habit of work, and profitability as a group. And it doesn't have to be number one. It just has to contribute in a meaningful way.
Now, by meaningful way, I know that in reading the judgment and the statements of facts and the evidence, as best I could interpret as a layman, Mr. Craig certainly did present a very detailed account of the number of exhaustive hours he'd spent in the racing industry. So is there a threshold of money or time, or is it just the all-encompassing reasonable amount?
Hours are very important. Hours relate, obviously, to the time committed. And what Mr. Craig was doing is in the mornings, he was getting up and looking at what his horses are doing. He was talking to his trainer. He was reviewing industry materials. He was participating. You know, he was doing this morning, lunch, and evening. When he wasn't working with his law job, he was involved very seriously in a number of associations in the standard bred industry. He founded one board, and so he was. A lot of his time was spent on the horse racing business. Not most of it, but a significant amount of his time.
Now, I understand that, but is there now a precedent as to how many hours, minimum, let's say, you must spend or document before?
No.
No, there is no. So it's really just whatever the bench deems to be reasonable.
It looks at hours. It looks basically to see how much of your life is spent in this business. Mm. And if it's a reasonable amount of time, if it's a meaningful commitment to this business, to this industry, that's enough. What the court says, I'll just read you something.
Sure.
The test, the court says, is whether the taxpayer's mode of operation, this is the horse racing business,
right,
has sufficient commitment and commerciality and profit potential to be recognized as a chief source applying the Muldown commitment and profitability criteria, looking at time spent, capital invested, and a meaningful profit potential arising from a dedication to profitability, the question of whether the taxpayer is recognizable as a committed, viable, commercial player in a genuine economic sector of the economy should be readily answered. I know that's a bit confusing, but
no,
that's it.
Not really. It does address the points that we're trying to deal with here.
One thing I will tell you that is also important in the Craig decision mm-hmm. is traditionally horse racing businesses were viewed as not a real business. It's a sports entertainment thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a person who's on a farm getting down and dirty, you know, with the cows or mm-hmm. the wheat field, that's a farmer. But Revenue Canada will kind of look at the horse racing industry and say, oh, you're just rich guys playing with horses. And what this case is saying now is no, horse racing is included by the Act in the definition of farming. It is as much a farm as any other kind of farming, and it should not be subjected to this prejudice of being, you know, a sports entertainment something. So therefore, we have to be judged more harshly
right.
than these other farmers. It says no. And the second thing that's important is they kind of looked at, you know, the lawyer downtown who has racehorses with a trainer because here Mr. Craig had his horses with the trainer. And in the thoroughbred racing industry, you know, many horse owners and breeders, their horses are with the trainer, and they're,
right.
they're looked after by the trainer.
And it's very, it's almost very hands-off kind of...
it is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the gentleman farmer or the city slicker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, there was a prejudice in the ministry against these people as not being real farmers and therefore subject to a higher standard. And again, the court has identified this clearly and said, no, that's not in the statute. That's not a prejudice that is accepted by these courts.
Well, that's interesting, because if you're the CEO of Heinz and you have thousands of acres of land on which corn is harvested for Green Giant or whatever the case may be, are you not then a farmer?
Yes, you're a farmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, you're a farmer.
Yeah.
And then once you can establish that it's being run as a business, which is the first test, then the question is, and this is only a question for farms, including horse racing, are you subjected to the Section 31 restriction on losses? That's the next question. And what Craig and Gunn are saying now is it's not a, simply what are you making from this farming operation or this horse racing operation, and if it's not as much or similar to what you're making from your other operation, you're stuck. It's saying no, as long as what you're doing in your farming activities and your horse racing activities is meaningful,
mm-hmm.
and a contribution to your overall
right.
you know, business world, that's enough. And they look at those factors of time committed, potential profitability, capital committed, and
sure.
the taxpayers' ordinary work habits.
I'm going to ask you this question because, quite frankly, I'm getting top-notch legal advice for free, so I may as well take advantage of this. Take the case of Nornburg Harness Racing Nut. I work in the industry full-time. I also have a number of freelance ventures. What we're doing now is one of them. Let's say I buy a horse tomorrow and I take a bath. Can I then fit under Muldown and Craig?
Well,
I put a lot of hours into harness racing.
Yeah, let's put it this way. Let's say up until 2009, you've been running a horse business and you've been a couple of years successful, more years than not unsuccessful. Mr. Craig, in the last 15 years, had losses in 13 of those 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and only 3 years of income.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you've had a few good years and mostly losses. What do you do in 2010? I would say in 2010, you go to your accountant or you go to your lawyer with a copy of the Craig decision and say, can I now start filing for full deduction of my losses instead of this $8,750? Because this case now says that the test in Muldown is eased, and that as long as the work I do, I'm an avid standard bred nut, I participate in association, right, and I do all this time, what I do is a meaningful contribution, my work routine, the time I spend, the capital I've committed, are all sizable enough to matter. They don't have to be the biggest thing I do in my world, but they matter. And based on Craig, do you think I can now deduct full deduction of losses? The Horse Racing Alliance of Canada, which is a group that is involved with all associations across Canada, including all the standard bred associations, is moving or lobbying the government to get rid of Section 31 altogether.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't RevCan, as it was called, trying to appeal this decision, though?
They're appealing, and our group, again, is moving to get rid of it altogether. And I think now that these cases have come, it's even more important that changes be made to this section, because now it's not just hurting the industry, it has the potential to hurt RevCan too. So they might pay attention.
Catherine Wilson, thank you so much once again. Thanks for being on Trot Radio.
Thank you very much.